good conversation.
Yeah, I'd listen to this. That's going to be the opener. Hey, everybody. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm John Cook, GeekWire co-founder.
Coming up on today's show, Andrew Yang's Bing Ding. Unfair zing or no big thing?
Oh, Todd, that's good.
Wow.
How long did you take to write that?
It took a while. That's, I had many different variations.
Really, really good.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. Also, a Microsoft shareholder proposes to put a rank and file employee on the company's board, citing strife between management and the company's workers. We'll find out what the board thinks about that. But first, we're going to start today's show out on the streets of Seattle. What's going on out there? Let's check in and see what's happening.
My corporate PAC bill says no to corporate greed and corruption. It says no to a democracy that is purchased. It says no. Seattle City Council is not the deal of the day, Amazon, and we are not selling our Seattle City Council and our democracy to the highest corporate bidder.
When billionaires are on the attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
When billionaires are on the attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
When billionaires are on the attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
Thank you and solidarity.
What the heck is going on, Monica?
This week, Amazon announced that it's going to put an additional $1 million behind the Seattle City Council races that are coming up next week, which is, brings their total funding on local elections to $1.45 million. And that's a lot of money in a Seattle race.
So who are they backing? What are they trying to do? And why are people upset about it?
So technically, the money is going to a political action committee of the Seattle Chamber of Commerce. And that political action committee, which is called CASE, has endorsed candidates for this. And we should say that the city council race is a pretty monumental one. 7 of the 9 seats are up for grabs. So those who are not happy with the current leadership, like Amazon, really see this as an opportunity to enact a big change. So the money that they've given to CASE is supporting the candidates that CASE has endorsed, and they're seen as more business-friendly, as an alternative to the very progressive Seattle City Council that we have now.
And CASE is an acronym for this political action committee that the Seattle Metro Chamber of Commerce.
Right. It stands for Civic Alliance for a Sound Economy.
I am so impressed that you know that.
Thank you. I've been writing about it quite a bit.
So this is a dynamic that's been going on since last year, since the head tax debate. And in fact, there were two sitting city council members who we heard in that clip.
That's right. This really started in 2017 with this battle over a tax on the biggest companies in Seattle that would have raised money for affordable housing and homeless services, which are two really big needs here in Seattle. And the council passed this tax. The business community led by Amazon was outraged and put up a big fight, and the city council ended up repealing it. But that battle really set the stage for what we're looking at now. I mean, Amazon came out with some really strong language saying that this was a hostile city council to big businesses and that the company was forced to question its growth in the city. And now you see them trying to elect new leaders who will be less hostile and even friendly or cooperative with business, they say.
So for 20 or 25 years, Amazon kept its mouth shut and its nose out of everything in Seattle. And now, a week before the election, they think it's politically smart to come in and toss $1 million into these races. I think this is the dumbest political move I've ever seen anyone do in Seattle politics.
Now, that is a very high bar.
This is worse than who was the mayor who had his street plowed before everybody else? Greg Nichols or
that was before my time.
Yes, it was Mayor McGinn or Greg Nichols. I think it was Nichols.
I get all those guys confused.
I do too. I think it was he had his street. Somebody on his team had his street plowed during a snowstorm before any other streets. That was a bad move. This is dumb. Why are they doing this? I think it is adding complete fuel to the opposition. It's going to backfire. I think this is going to backfire because this is the last thing you want is for the progressive, if you're Amazon or on the side of CASE, that you want this protest going on in front of the spheres and a political dialogue, if you were considering perhaps somebody who was supported by CASE, to have a messaging now, well, I don't want to be in the back pocket of Amazon, which is already controlling our city. You know, the dialogue is bad. I don't know, Monica, what are your thoughts on this?
It's a good point. I think that it is risky, but it's so much money that I think Amazon is taking the bet that it's going to be impactful, that they are going to succeed in electing a new city council, and that in the long term for their business, that will be better. It could backfire, but you have to understand, this is more than all of the other candidates have raised combined.
But it's a week out, right?
When is the election out?
It's in November.
November 5th. It's November 5th. So it's a couple weeks out. I mean, I think it's risky for Amazon, and I think it backfires. That's my greed.
One interesting sign that you might be onto something is that some of the candidates who have been endorsed by Case have disavowed the money.
Oh, wow.
Have said, you know, it's a distraction. We're a grassroots campaign. We don't need PAC money. So that's kind of interesting.
That does say something because think about it. If you're the political candidate and you are supported by Case and now you're the Amazon candidate, I mean, you're going to get branded that way, and it's going to negatively impact you. So it's not a surprise that some of these candidates are stepping away from the association here.
Is it possible to get a sense for what an Amazon-backed council would be like, would look like, and would do?
That's a great question. The message that Case, that Amazon, that a lot of folks in the business community are sending is that they think we need a return to good governance, that we need a more pragmatic leadership that's not so ideologically driven. Now, that's kind of the extent of the messaging that I've heard. It's not as grounded in policies, I would say, as it is kind of a desire to back away from the position we're in now, which is a city council that passes some of the most progressive legislation in the country, like the $15 minimum wage, paid leave for workers.
The head tax. It was passed and then repealed.
Allowing Uber drivers to unionize. You know, it's a lot of legislation that – or a lot of policies that are being talked about everywhere throughout the country as these progressive reforms to address income inequality in our economy. A lot of those are tested here in Seattle as kind of a laboratory. My sense is that the candidates that Case is backing are just an effort to step back from that and to do kind of more run-of-the-mill government.
Monica, you've been reporting on this story over the past week. Any behind-the-scenes tidbits that you can share from like how Amazon approached it, what they did? Were you able to pick up on them being sensitive to how this might be perceived or whether the backlash was a surprise?
You know, sometimes you see Amazon getting surprised. Like, I don't think that they really anticipated how much backlash there would be to their HQ2 search. In fact, I know that they didn't. The request for government incentives from the cities that were competing for that really struck a nerve that I don't think Amazon was expecting. In this case, I think they've learned their lesson a little bit. They knew what was going to happen. And one sign of that is before the filings went live and reporters were able to find out that they made this contribution through online documents, Amazon sent out its statement and explained what it was doing and why. And that's pretty unusual. And to me, that says, we know this is going to be a huge thing and we want to just get out ahead of it.
Well, we'll see how it plays out on November 5th.
All right. So that is Amazon's donation of a total of $1.45 million to CASE, the Political Action Committee for the Seattle Metro Chamber of Commerce, which is hoping to put what's perceived to be a more business-friendly city council together. This is really, as you said, Monica, an example, kind of the front lines of this larger clash between progressive politics and big tech. We're seeing it play out on the national stage and also here locally. And I think, as you said, John, this election is going to be interesting as a litmus test.
Yeah, well, you did see it this week, even in with the Democratic presidential debate, where this was a topic of discussion for a good chunk of the debate, frankly.
Perfect segue, John. So let's talk about Andrew Yang. I will stop rhyming, I promise. But Andrew Yang is the entrepreneur turned political candidate, first time candidate running for president. He is in the Democratic primaries still. It's incredible that he's still there when you look at the veteran politicians who have dropped out of the race. I actually got a chance to interview him a few months ago. He's a fascinating guy, and he's not your run-of-the-mill politician. As we saw in the debates on Tuesday night, let's hear what he had to say about Elizabeth Warren's plan to break up big tech.
But we also have to be realistic that competition doesn't solve all of the problems. It's not like any of us wants to use the fourth best navigation app. There's a reason why no one is using Bing today. Sorry, Microsoft, it's true. So it's not like breaking up these big tech companies will revive Main Street businesses around the country. And as the parent of two young children, I'm particularly concerned about screen use and its effect on our children. Studies clearly show that we're seeing record levels of anxiety and depression coincident with smartphone adoption and social media use. Breaking up the tech companies does nothing to make our kids healthier. What we have to do is we have to home in on the specific problems we're trying to solve and use 21st century solutions for 21st century problems. Using a 20th century antitrust framework will not work.
All right. There was a lot there, but it started with a real jab at Microsoft Bing. I have a lot of thoughts about this, John, but I think you do too. So let's hear it.
I like a lot of what Andrew Yang has to say. I appreciate his different voice in politics. But he's wrong here. What is he doing attacking Bing and Microsoft? Bing is a viable, technologically advanced search engine.
When was the last time you used it?
I don't use it, but it is a good product, and it is a good alternative.
We assume. No one knows because none of us have used it.
I use it all the time.
You do?
Yes.
It's not a bad product. It's just no one uses it.
In fact, it's quite a good product.
Yes.
So you're more likely to use Bing if you use Windows because you're more likely to use Edge, the successor to Internet Explorer, if you use Windows, and therefore you're more likely to get hooked into the Bing search engine. 25% of the U.S. population of U.S. Internet searches per ComScore are made through Bing. Google is more like 65%. Yahoo is still in there. So on its face, his statement was literally not true. Now, of course, it was hyperbole, but you can sit there and say 25% does not equal zero. I mean, Andrew Yang, the data-driven candidate here, should acknowledge that. Now, globally, it kind of is true. Bing is in the low single digits compared to more than 90% for Google. So there are the actual facts. I thought it got conflated a little bit because we're talking about antitrust here, and he was making a different point about antitrust. He was saying, hey, just breaking these companies up doesn't do it. It's not enough because really most people just want one or two maybe dominant players or strong players in the market. But that got conflated into a question of, was Microsoft's antitrust remedy effective? And that's a whole other question.
Right. It's confusing because Microsoft did go through its own antitrust ordeal. But then this is like a different thing. And it just, I think it really muddied the waters.
It was technically focused on Internet Explorer and Windows Media Player and other things like that. But the search engine would be an extension of that. Once they launched that later, it would have been easier for them to favor Bing had they been able to continue unfairly favoring Internet Explorer in the Windows interface. That is ancient history.
We're deep in the weeds now.
There is an argument to be made that were there not an antitrust case against Microsoft in the late 90s and early 2000s that Google would have had a harder time becoming dominant because Microsoft would have had an easier time favoring its search engine.
I'm having a hard time keeping up of every argument he made in that short clip.
It's true.
I'm going to slam Bing. It's a terrible search engine. Kids have too much screen time and there's anxiety in our culture as a result of it. Breaking up big tech isn't going to do it.
But we do need a new antitrust framework.
But I know. It's like, oh my God.
I agree with
his brain is like firing in a lot of different ways that I don't know if the American population is grasping everything going on there.
No, I will say that he is a big fan of Microsoft PowerPoint. And in fact, he has said he would become the first president, if elected, to use PowerPoint at the State of the Union because he would have all of these metrics that he uses to track the progress of the country.
I'm going
to
be the first president to use PowerPoint in the State of the Union. How do you feel about that? Yes.
PowerPoint.
Yes, this is the nerdiest presidential campaign in history. We weren't quite there until that moment, but then you just did it.
All right, so that is Andrew Yang's Bing Ding Zing. Sorry, I just
you
had to do it one more time.
Anymore.
I'm sorry.
All
right. That wasn't the full thing.
All right, and we'll be right back.
On your Bing Ding Zing.
All right, we'll be right back with details of a Microsoft shareholder proposal that wants to put an employee of the company on the company's board, and we'll tell you what the board thinks about that. That's coming up next on GeekWire.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg and John Cook. In the life of a tech reporter who focuses on the business of these companies, it is such a pleasant surprise when you see a few different filings in your inbox. And one of them is the DEF-14A.
I love it.
Yeah, the DEF-14A, it arrives in the inbox and you're like, yes, scoops. There are scoops to be had in there. And Microsoft's proxy statement, as it's known, arrived in the inbox this week. It basically details everything from the salaries that the executives are making to the issues to be voted on at the company's shareholder meeting. And one of those issues, Monica, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I got to tell Monica about this.
And you immediately did.
And that was a shareholder proposal to study. I hate the way they do this.
I know.
I'd rather just say, have them say, here, let's do this. But instead, they're saying, let's study the possibility of putting an employee on Microsoft's board. So, Monica, this is part of a larger trend, as you explained to me as soon as we started talking about it. Can you explain that?
Yeah, it's amazing because it's just the convergence of all of these factors that make it something that could really only happen at this moment in time in 2019. So we've got this new wave of employee activism and shareholder activism in big tech companies, largely driven by the Trump administration and some of their more controversial policies like child separation, where employees and shareholders are feeling especially motivated to do everything that they can to try to enact change. And we also have a very tight labor market, which means they have a lot of leverage over their employers. So they've started asking their employers, really demanding through a series of demonstrations and other protest movements and shareholder resolutions, asking these companies to take stands on things like climate change, immigration, a whole host of policies. So that's one of the things that's happening here. Another is that in a really remarkable short period of time, American politics, and particularly the Democratic Party, have moved pretty far to the left, driven by leaders like Senator Warren, Senator Sanders, Representative Ocasio-Cortez. All of a sudden, we're talking about all of these things that might be popular in Europe, but have really never been discussed here, ways to kind of rein in what's seen as an unruly capitalism that has led to a lot of income inequality. So this idea of employee representation on corporate boards is actually part of both Warren and Sanders' campaigns for president in 2020. And we're seeing that very present in this shareholder resolution, which actually directly refers to Warren's campaign.
So the whole idea is that Microsoft would encourage the placement of an employee on the board, and the logic of the shareholder, who is unnamed, by the way, it's actually unusual. Usually they will say this is a proposal from this activist group or it's a proposal from this individual, but it doesn't name it. But the whole idea is that this would help to address what the proposal calls, quote, strained relations between employees and management over issues like gender discrimination, sexual harassment, government technology contracts. The way it's written actually makes me think it's from an outside shareholder, not from an employee, and that it might be the first step in a broader movement by some organization out there. We don't yet know who, as of this recording, to do this at a variety of tech companies. I would not be surprised if this same resolution ends up at Google, Facebook, and Amazon at least.
That would be really interesting.
The board does not like this.
They're not going for it. No, it's a no from the board.
The board recommends a vote against, which is actually very common. It's pretty uncommon that a shareholder proposal would come through that the board agrees with, because the board typically, if they did agree with it, would probably just adopt it as their own. But they said, in part, our existing director selection process is designed to identify and nominate the strongest director candidates from all available sources, including our employees. I wonder if they truly consider non-management, non-senior leadership employees for the board. I
don't think
that would be a stretch.
Yes.
It would be a stretch. And let me just say, for the record, Satya Nadella is on the Microsoft board. He is technically an employee, but he's also the CEO. And this resolution is calling for non-management representation on the board. And then second, Microsoft's board actually has become much more diverse. Several of the company's longtime directors who were in sort of old line businesses, bringing more of a staid business approach, have departed. And Microsoft has brought in a much more diverse set of directors who are now overseeing the company on the board.
but it's much less socioeconomically diverse. And that, I think, is at the heart of this proposal. And this proposal, I mean, I know it's a proposal to study, but let's just talk about it as if it's, you know,
right,
suggesting the idea of a study.
And the board treated it that way effectively, right, in their response.
This idea of having one employee on the board is not actually even as radical as some of the other approaches in other countries and some of the approaches that progressive politicians are proposing. Like, Sanders and Warren want to have 40 to 45% of corporate boards be elected by employees. So introducing a little bit more of a democratic process within corporate America. And I think the concern here is that while we might be shooting for more gender or ethnic or identity diversity on corporate boards, they're still very wealthy, very powerful people making decisions for thousands of people who are not in that same position.
Yeah,
I don't think it'll pass, but it is an interesting development. I agree with what Monica's saying, and I think we are at an interesting time here where a resolution like this can be proposed. I mean, you see something like the Business Roundtable, which is made up of the most powerful CEOs across the country, coming out recently, whereas historically the charter of the Business Roundtable was to maximize shareholder value. That was like their the number one thing and only thing you were supposed to do as a corporation and as a CEO, maximize shareholder value. Well, a few weeks ago, they amended their mission statement to say, no, we actually need to do more. We need to be engaged with our communities and our employees and a more holistic approach to business. So we are moving out of this era of the Wall Street 80s, 90s era, where greed is good, to this new place where it's uncharted territory, really. And it's going to be interesting to see how companies adapt or don't adapt to this changing landscape. But I think it's real and it's here, and companies need to pay attention to it.
It's a fascinating time because that shareholders above all else, greed is good kind of mentality, as you said, really started in the 80s. Before that, companies were a lot more holistically focused and invested in, you know, raising employee salaries and being good members of the community. And now, 30 or 40 years later, we're kind of seeing what happens when that mentality plays out and some real fault lines in our economy and society.
And circling back to our original discussion where we were talking about Amazon, I mean, this is kind of coming full circle to some degree, where you have a company like Amazon that wasn't engaged as much in the community historically and now is trying to engage. And by their engagement efforts, they are polarizing parts of the community. And so companies have to be really, really careful here in how they make this transition. I would argue, based on my comments earlier, Amazon is not doing a good job of how they are making this transition. In part, I would argue, because historically it was not embedded in their mission or culture to do so. I think that's why when you look back at the money they're just throwing at the problem isn't necessarily the right approach in this case. But companies are adapting to this new reality.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot because I've been tracking a lot of the conversation in DC about big tech. And one thing that's really struck me is Amazon gets called out a lot more than anyone else. Like, a good example is Bernie Sanders just put out his plan for corporate America, and Amazon was mentioned 3 times more than any other company. And it was the same in the early presidential debates. It's been the same in hearings in Congress. And it strikes me as kind of odd because why not Google, you know, which owns everything? Why not Facebook, which is arguably disrupting our democracy? Why Amazon? And my theory is that it's that they haven't navigated these political situations with as much caution as other companies.
Right. I agree with that. I also think Amazon's an odd company. It's a weird company. Even in the scheme of these large tech companies, it's a weird company. As Bezos likes to say, you know, we're willing to be misunderstood for long periods of time. And I think that's great when you're running a business, and it's been a philosophy that has helped them reach amazing success. But being misunderstood for long periods of time when you're dealing with these really complex issues right here in the here and now is not really a great place to be, because they come across as being out of touch or weird in how they interact with the larger communities they deal with.
In my behind the scenes conversations with some Amazon folks, I think that they are purposefully not saying that anymore.
Not saying, oh, we're willing to be misunderstood
for long periods of time.
That's the new slogan. We're trying to be understood.
I don't know what the new slogan is, but
maybe it's day two. That's the new slogan. No, it's never day two.
Is this their move fast and break things, that we no longer move fast and break things moment?
It is. It's not quite that bad because it's not quite that obvious. I think the implications of being willing to be misunderstood for long periods of time are not as obvious, but ultimately the effect is similar in that they're not really thinking of the bigger picture and how they're perceived externally.
I mean, this dates back to Bill Gates, who used to brag about not having a DC office because, like, why does that matter?
Yeah.
You know, when these companies are younger, they've got this, like, we don't care what you think about us attitude. And then there are serious implications from the way that they behave. And then it's kind of all of a sudden like, ah, sorry, we actually do kind of care. Please don't sue us, you know.
Well, hey, this plays into my random channel item. So let's take a break and we'll be right back with the random channel. You're listening to GeekWire and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. It's time for the random channel, that moment of the week when we talk about some of the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire. I'll kick it off since I did the segue.
You're excited. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I just finished Trailblazer, the new book from Mark Benioff, the Salesforce co-CEO and co-founder. The co-CEO thing still is really odd, but it's a fascinating book. He is essentially an accidental activist CEO. It is very much a survey and a story of his evolution and awakening to a lot of these issues. And to your point earlier, John, he makes the case that the most important thing that businesses need to do is to, well, he says, innovation cannot advance in a positive direction unless it's grounded in genuine and continued efforts to lift up all of humanity. And he makes the case that only the businesses that focus on that fact in the years ahead will prosper. He thinks that will be far more important than profits and shareholder value, or at least that it will be the key to leading to profits and shareholder value. It was a fascinating book, and it was an easy read, a couple hundred pages.
Well, I like the part that you pointed out. I think it was in your story on the book where there's a Seattle angle to it.
That's right. So what happened was the opponents of Proposition C, which was San Francisco's effort to raise funds for homelessness initiatives, the opponents were emboldened by Amazon's opposition to the head tax here. He said he presumed that his fellow industry leaders had watched closely as Amazon had defeated a corporate tax proposition in Seattle earlier in the year, and he was, quote, determined not to let them follow that playbook in San Francisco. And Proposition C in San Francisco passed.
It did. Yes, it is facing some legal challenges, but yeah, it passed.
And it was different.
It was different.
It was a tax on corporate receipts versus a tax on number of employees.
But what was similar is members of the tech industry like Jack Dorsey, in the same way that Amazon and members of the business community in Seattle said, you know, we want to deal with homelessness. We care about these issues, but this isn't the right approach. And then Benioff and Dorsey got into this heated exchange on Twitter. But I thought that was just so fascinating. And the thing that's interesting to me about this is this was a municipal tax, a little local Seattle piece of legislation that under different circumstances, no one would be talking about. And it made national news. It made Benioff's book. I mean, we're still talking about it today. It's just amazing how different the story is because of what Amazon did and how Amazon reacted.
And it speaks to, and I know you've written about this, Monica, just some of the stuff that is emanating right now from Seattle is really interesting in terms of how it's fueling the national debate. You talk about the $15 minimum wage, which also really started here. And now you've seen that kind of come full circle where now Amazon is instituting a $15 minimum wage. And so there are things occurring here that are really having a dramatic impact nationally.
Yeah, it's a really interesting place to be a reporter.
So that's my random channel item. If you've finished Brad Smith's book, Tools and Weapons, and you're looking for more from a tech leader.
How many stars, Todd? How many stars on Benioff's book?
I'd give it four out of five, and I'd give Brad's 4.5.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right up there. It's a good read. Different, but a good read. What's your random channel?
Oh, my random channel. I read something really interesting this week.
Do tell.
Katie Herzog at The Stranger is embarking on this editorial project where she's going to try to convince someone who voted for Trump in 2016 to not vote for him
wow.
in 2020.
That's super interesting.
And she published her Q&A, her, you know, first attempt to convince this guy on The Stranger, and I read it, and it just was a fascinating window to me into his perspective because, you know, as we've mentioned, we're here in Seattle and there's a pretty small percentage of Trump supporters here, so we don't have the opportunity to engage with them as much as...
You want to come back to Ohio with me sometime, Monica?
I would love to, yeah. I'm always game.
Yeah, that's right.
I am always game to have this kind of conversation, you know, especially it was...
No, you're not.
Wait, what are you talking about?
If it's a civil discussion...
usually not.
Yeah. Well, this one was.
Okay, good.
And what really interested me about it was... He doesn't particularly like Trump. In fact, at some point he says he's a really bad guy. He doesn't really support his policies, but he really didn't like Hillary Clinton. And that's something that we hear a lot and we see a lot. And the reason is because mainly of her basket of deplorables comment.
Oh, wow.
Because he feels like she hated him and people like him. And that is the same bar he's using to judge candidates today. So he's open to potentially voting for a Democrat. He voted for Democrats in every election before this one. But he says basically his bottom line is, I'm not going to vote for someone who I think despises me, even if I think they'd be better for the country.
Wow. Wow.
Interesting journalistic project.
Yeah.
Looking forward to reading that.
So I highly recommend reading it and following her journey and seeing if she's successful. It's Katie Herzog at The Stranger, and I'm definitely going to be following along.
And what's the name of the series?
It's called... Breach the Bubble.
Breach the Bubble.
Yeah. Excellent. Nice. I don't really have one. I guess I'll follow, since we're sharing either book advice or article advice, I'll share my video advice. I started to watch Inside Bill's Brain, the Netflix series on Bill Gates. It's excellent. I'll give it a 4.5 stars. 4.5 stars. Yeah. That's my random channel.
All right.
Yeah. Enjoy it.
Love a recommendation.
People have probably already watched it at this point.
I haven't watched it yet.
It's good.
There was also a fascinating story and some great reporting by the New York Times about the connections between Bill Gates and Jeffrey Epstein. Nothing overly scandalous, but certainly a stronger connection than Bill Gates had let on previously.
Interesting.
And they documented it to the hilt. It was really fascinating. That's the Random Channel, and that is GeekWire. Be sure to subscribe to GeekWire in your favorite podcast app. And check out geekwire.com/podcast for show notes and links to everything we talked about. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
And I'm John Cook.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.